Welcome to The Sustainable Life. This is Josh Spodek, and I'm here with Stephen Broyles. Stephen, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm very good, and I've been looking forward to this call because there were a number of ways that when we spoke last time, it felt like there was resonance and overlap. One of them was I heard enthusiasm for doing your commitment. And then also, I was learning about social work and learning about what you teach and how, you know, this overlap between people are constantly saying individual action and systemic change don't overlap. If you're doing one, you must be not doing the other. And so I'm curious about how both of us, I think, would disagree with that. And tell me if I misstate you.
You're correct.
Okay. And so I'm curious if there's relevance in what we did to what you do, if it's okay, if we can put things onto that if you want, or otherwise I'd love to jump into how the Spodek method went for you. Any preference on where to start?
It's your show, but we can start with we can talk about the Spodek method and how it happened, and actually my journey as I did some of that work.
Okay, so do you remember when I asked you what the environment meant to you, what you think of and see and feel when you think of the environment?
Yeah. And so, a lot of me, it was a chance to recharge.
Oh, hold on. Not what you did, but when I asked you before, I want to walk through. See, a lot of people talk about what they do, and I want to get to that. But the intrinsic motivation driving it, I think, is more like I don't want to lose that. So do you remember what motivated you to commit what you committed to?
Yeah. A lot of it is just, like I said, there's an intrinsic connection and calm I have that allows me to recharge when I am, in particular, we say specifically, so when I'm around water. It is peaceful for me. It is a chance where I can, kind of reflect on, I'm the kind of person, I'm a history buff, history nerd, and I can see a body of water and see what that's meant over time, both the good and the bad in it and the connection with it. So for me, it's always a point of connection. It's always a point where I know that if I am there, there's a passion I have for that. And also seeing where there is a desire to be a good steward of it because of the connection that I have with it. And I hope that kind of begins to answer. If not, then I know you're going to lead me in the right direction.
Yeah, that was it. And I spoke too soon. I interrupted you too soon, and I apologize for that. And I'll hear that from my listeners. Sorry, because I think you were answering the question I actually asked. So what did you do? Do you remember what you committed to?
Yeah. Well, one of the things, it was two things I said I wanted to do. The first one is, again, water and getting to water and making sure that that is going to be an ongoing thing that I do. I was able to do that. And again, it's locally, and there's a whole bunch of things that was happening with the Anacostia River and in terms of cleanup and the sustainability. And I think this is the first time that now people are talking about whether or not you can actually swim in the Anacostia River. And we're getting to the point where that's where the river is going. So a lot of it has been the work to sustain that river, to make sure that it's clean, the things that we can do individually in our own homes so there's not runoff in terms of rain barrels and rock gardens and stuff like that, that just we know that will improve that body of water over time. And I've definitely had a chance to do some of those items in terms of the mitigation things at home, but I've also had an opportunity to spend time at the water. We're going, going down to Anacostia Park more frequently than I never normally would, being around the Potomac on the waterfront. So I've had a chance to do that. And when I say that when life is hectic, it has helped me tremendously, but it's also allowed me to realize there's certain things that I can do as part of people collectively that can make those bodies of water sustainable and better and make sure that the next generation after us can enjoy it. Now, the other part we're looking at, as I mentioned before, there's a number of areas around, D.C. D.C. has a number of wooded areas. And even though we are a city, the one thing that's very similar to where I grew up in Michigan is I'm going to see wooded areas, and you're going to also see a lot of wildlife in those wooded areas. But part of it was doing some of the cleanup where you have a chance to cut down some of the invasive, vines that are actually causing harm to the trees, particularly younger trees that are there. Now, there are groups here in D.C. that will go through those areas where the trails are, and they'll actually, you know, caretake for some of those. Now, that one, I'm still going to go ahead and do. I think, as we mentioned before, I had a little bout where after a few years, COVID finally made my way. But now, and now particularly if the weather is broken, they're going to resume that. So I'll be able to take part in that as well. So I'm looking forward to that one because there's a number of areas in my area down Branch Avenue where there are trails, Fort Davis, you know, Park, where, they're, again, a very wooded area that we're already seen the data that said that if we don't maintain those areas, then those wooded areas will not be here a few generations from now. They'll just be gone.
Well, first things first, you mentioned not feeling well, so it sounds like you're feeling better. Are you feeling better?
I am 180 degree turnaround better.
Glad to hear. And all right, so with the water activity, you talked about cleaning things up. And I want to make sure that, or I want to check, when you did these things, were you doing it, okay, the following is not, it's not one or the other, but were you doing it only to fix things, or were you also doing it to channel and to create emotions beyond what you might have otherwise?
Well, it's never just to fix it, because, I mean, for what it's worth, and I think this kind of falls, we mentioned the whole thing about sustainability and leadership. You know, I was talking to students last night. And really, if whatever work they're interested in doing in the field, it's that much more impactful if they have a personal connection to it. I always say there is someone out there that loves to do that work and is willing to do it. Do what you love. So for me, it's not just to fix it. It's saying it's to me, it's just caretaking over something I you know, it's just stewardship over something I care about and love. If I want to be able to enjoy the water, you know, enjoy it fully, then I want to do my part as a steward of that. We talk a lot about, you mentioned before about the whole idea, and I know I'm kind of weaving it all together, but individual as opposed to systemic. And I will tell everybody, it's not a binary choice. It's you do both. There are individual level changes that you can do collectively that will make an impact, but that does not preclude you from also looking at some of these other items. I understand that if I'm doing a rain barrel where I don't have the type of runoff that's going to go into the sewer system, that's going to go into the Anacostia. Okay, I'm doing my individual part that has a collective impact. But I also understand that for me, and you know, intuitively, that going to a place that I find relaxation in, and making sure that it's still there, that can be enjoyed, that other folks can have it down the road. And then, you know, that becomes a part, not just to fix it as part of an assignment, but if it's something, it's like anything else you care about, you take care of it. And that's more so where it comes from.
And just to make sure, would you have done this anyway, or was this stuff you did specifically because of our conversation?
I probably would not have done it without being prompted. I mean, there's certain things like the environmental mitigations for our home, you know, that's just one of the things I just believe in being a good steward, where it's a low hanging fruit type of change. There's programs within the District of Columbia that offset those costs. So for me, that was easy enough to do. Now, going to those other steps in terms of looking at that group, you know, in terms of invasive, you know, species in the forest area, you always will tell yourself, like, oh, eventually I'll get down to the water. I'm just really busy now. I'll get down to it. As opposed to, no, now I'd be more mindful about it. I honestly believe that, and I can say, I'm not speaking this as scientific fact or anything like this, but I, in my gut, believe it was healing in terms of my recovery as well. Being able to be in a place where I'm at peace, my body's at peace, where I'm enjoying fresh air as well. There's no way you're going to tell me that that was not beneficial. And I don't think I would have done that otherwise. It would have been like, I'll get to it when I get time, as opposed to, no, this needs to be an essential part of what and now kind of reframed how I look at it, where just like exercise is a part of my lifestyle, then that becomes a lifestyle choice, not just an assignment.
that last result is, I find very interesting, and I hear a fair amount of time with the guests, is that I don't have time for that sort of stuff until they do it. And I think the intrinsic motivation, I think if I said, Stephen, go down after we talk, why don't you go and fix some rivers? I don't think it would work. I wouldn't know to guess something that would resonate with you without hearing what your intrinsic motivations were, what resonated with you before I ever met you. But even if I guessed it right, if I compelled you to do it, I don't think you'd get out of it what you got out of it. And when we act on our values, and I'm totally leading the witness here, sorry, maybe I shouldn't lead the witness so much. I find that people go from, I don't have time for this, for sustainability, to after they do it, they realize this is why not doing that is why I got so full of busy work that I felt that I didn't have time. Like the cause and effect are backward. Yeah. It's not that time in nature, if you being busy means you don't have time in nature. Not having time in nature makes you busy.
Yeah. I mean, the one fundamental lesson I learned in life about time is everything you say yes to, by default, you're saying no to something else. So if I say yes to more work, then I'm saying no to more time for rest, or no to more time for the people I love and care about, or no to more things, to the things that, because, and I'm thinking it's an even trade-off, and it's not. So if you had asked me to do the four in terms of go clean up the river, I'm like, look, I'm doing my own part. I'm working in other areas. I'm dealing with food insecurity. I'm dealing with issues of inclusion. I'm training folks. I will list all the things that I'm doing well and say, I don't need to add one more thing to my list. As opposed to where now it's just like, it was the same thing kind of like with exercise, where I realized that if it's a lifestyle change and it becomes important, then everything else yields to that. And you realize this is an important part that strengthens, builds you, recharges you, whatever it may be. I mean, I could go eat out or I could cook. My body is going to appreciate the fact that I cook something healthy. My body is going to appreciate the fact that I exercise as a part of my lifestyle, not just a one-off. And now taking that time to recharge, you know, by the water in particular, that now means that, okay, I can go into a week fresher. I can go into a week with a clear mind. I can go into a week able to prioritize, as opposed to just doing busy work, but doing focused, efficient work, because now I'm settled and I've set aside a certain day of the week where it's more of a day where I kind of get myself settled. And that's something that I would not have done in the past.
Well, I'm like halfway to turning off the computer and walking down to the river. That's just relaxing. It's a Friday afternoon. Well, can you walk us through what did you actually do any of the times that you were doing these things?
Well, I mean, the one thing is, the great thing about DC is there's enough bodies of water that are convenient to where I'm at. Anacostia Park is a great one. I can, if I really want to, I can walk to Anacostia Park. And then you have the Anacostia River right there. They're going to be doing a whole project, the 11th Street project, where that was right above the Anacostia. Everything else is a metro ride. I want to get to the waterfront. So a lot of times I will have a certain day of the week where I say it's more my administrative day. What I can do on that day is it allows me to spend some time by the waterfront, and I'm just reflecting on what I need to do that week. I'm planning. I'm taking a breather. And they'll say, now that I'm centered, let me figure out what I need to prioritize this week. I love, you know, going down to the National Harbor, and I love the fact that they have the benches and everything where I can sit right there. Now, when the temperature's colder, then yeah, it could be more challenging, because I told folks I grew up in the Midwest, and the Midwest winter is nothing to play with. And being by the water, you know, growing up in Detroit, you know, and also have family in Chicago, you know, the waterfront and the wind off the water is not to be trifled with. But I still realize, like I said again, it's just the thought. It's not just seeing it, but it is, like I said, as you reflect on the history of the water, as you can use it to calm. It's a point where even my breathing is as the waves kind of go. And now let me refocus. Now let me take a step back and think about that week. That became a very easy thing to do. And it's going to become something that becomes an essential thing to do as I move forward. And it's definitely something I'm going to maintain. And I honestly believe when I have a chance to now be able to do those things in the forest, I already know I'm going to see those in a different light. When I initially got here, I was like, okay, let me just, out of curiosity, let me walk through these trails. And, you know, I was like, okay. And that's when I realized we got more deer and fox and everything else than I realized we had in D.C., even hawks and things like that. But now I think being there with other folks, caring for this park, you know, caring for these spaces, where I know that this is important to me because it reminds me of my original home, growing up in Michigan, and what it means to be there. It's just one of those things where I see it the same way as diet and exercise at this point, where doing those build me up and strengthens me for the other things I'm going to do in life. And since nature hates a vacuum, no pun intended, the time I spend there is time well spent that prepares me better for the other things I have to do that could be more stressful.
It's dawning on me that maybe this had a bigger effect on you than I was picking up on. Did your experience lead you from maybe going there sometimes to really making it a regular part of your life? I mean, it's hard to predict.
Yeah, I mean,
too much, but
it's more regular. I mean, the thing is, I've always known I've loved the water. I've always said things such as, I want to learn how to sail and get a sailing license. I want to spend more time. I've always known that, but it's always been, I am so busy. And I can legitimately say that. I can say with my load, yeah. And I'm doing work that's impactful. So my justification was always, I'm doing work. I'm helping people. I'm making changes in communities. I'm doing work on national and international levels. You know, what's more important? Me going down there for, you know, for an afternoon, or making sure that this community has access to whatever it may be? And to me, it would seem like that was always a fair trade-off. What I'm realizing is that I don't have to make, again, it's not a binary choice. I think the biggest things that I realize in many things, not only this one in life, is that we create artificial choices that don't have to be there. So I don't have to sacrifice one to do the other. If anything, doing one allows me to do the other one better. And once you see that as an aid, as something that makes you better, then it's easier to adopt it as a lifestyle. I made that same transition with the food I eat, with making sure that I exercise in terms of, okay, if I'm going to be standing on my feet, training or teaching, or if I'm going around, or if I'm sleeping, you know, on a plane, then I need to move around other times so my body can, you know, because I'm not a spring chicken anymore. And I realized that the time I spent exercising became essential to having the strength and endurance to do the other things I do. I didn't see that connection with water, for example, until now. Now I'm saying, okay, that's going to now move into the category of the similar to the way I eat, the way I work out. And this is just going to become another part because it strengthens me in a way I can do the other things better.
So this sounds like it's maybe not a huge life turning point, but a step in a meaningful direction.
Yeah, it's going to allow me to do what I do longer and better. And I think, you know, it improves the overall quality of life. Like I said, again, a lot of people think I'm younger than I am. I said, oh, no. I wasn't around with a stone and chisel, but I wasn't too far behind it either. And it's mainly because of those things. I didn't realize that time, for example, spent at the water would be one of those things. That was an epiphany. Where before it was just like, okay, I had finally spent months doing this. Okay, the weather's nice. Let me go ahead and go down to the harbor and sit by the water for a little while and read a book. That would be more like a treat as opposed to, nah, you need to do this. Where now it's like, no, bruh, you need to do this. And that's where it's become.
Tell me if this view resonates with you, that growing up, I always knew this division between, a lot of people make a division between mind and body. I mean, you know, they'll also say that these things aren't separate, but if you focus too much on one to the neglect of the other, you're probably going to be out of balance. And some people might put spirit or God in there, so it might be three or four legs to that stool. And I grew up seeing things more or less like that. And as I've done more stewardship work, I've found that nature is as important as any of those things. So diet and exercise and sleep and reading and learning and having, you know, interesting conversations. Also nature. Without time in nature, something's going to give. And Does that resonate with you? Because I really didn't notice it. And I think that for most of human history, no one had to think about it because it was automatic. They're just anyone could take a walk and be on a beach in solitude or in a forest with solitude, and it was accessible. And I think only in the past couple generations, we have people have zero access to it, including at the every end of the political spectrum and every end of the economic spectrum. The richest people in the world also have little access to it. It's like hard for someone to get, like I couldn't walk, I'd probably have to walk 8 hours before I could not hear traffic or helicopters. And so anyway, I didn't want to get too much into that part, but that nature is not a nice to have. Without it, yeah, you said it's, to say that it's beneficial to me implies that the base is not having nature, and then with nature, it's a bonus. But I like to think that with nature is normal, and without it is anti-beneficial. And so we've made a world that's very, that has a lot of anti-benefits in it. But that with nature is the, I'd like to think of that. I mean, everyone is free to define normal how they want. But for me, I like to think with nature is how what humans are, you know, that's how we came to be. And if we go without it for a long time or for too much, we get sick. Not that with it, we get healthy. We're healthy automatically. That's, you get what I'm saying?
I get it. Absolutely. And honestly, I would say over the last year, I began to get a better understanding of that. I hadn't practiced it personally, but in social work, for example, we teach about human-centered design. And that's something I became very much interested in terms of how do you design spaces, for example, that maximize who we are, what we do, how we make decisions, et cetera. And the one consistent thing I saw over time looking at it was that people and nature have always been, you know, intertwined. It was not, and you mentioned it right there. There were points in time where we were always connected. I don't want to call it symbiotic, but it's always been the case where people have thrived. And when you looked at how people originally lived and developed communities, you kind of realize that nature was just a part. It wasn't the add-on. It's kind of like we said, the difference between human-centered design to life-centered design, where we are kind of looking at it in a way where, I'll give you an example. They got hospitals where after a person has surgery, they'll be in a room, and after a period of time, their bed will rotate, and there is garden space in the facility that, or directly outside of it, where people have access to and can live, I mean, they can see as they recover. And that's improved their recovery results. We're seeing a lot of places where now that's incorporated in that because we're realizing, like you said, it's not an add-on. It's not like, hey, it'd be nice to get away to. It's no, it's always been beneficial to have it incorporated into our space and not just, and we're talking about everyday space, work, play, worship, you name it. Nature was intertwined in it. And it's kind of like we're having this epiphany, well, we're getting back to what we always did, you know, intrinsically. And I think it's one thing to teach about things such as human-centered design and life-centered design and say, hey, it's good for academic performance, it's good for work environments, you know, it's all this stuff is good. And then you kind of realize, oh, snap, I haven't done this. Let me see what it's like in my own personal life. And like I said, doing this on a regular basis, now I see the absence of it is the same way I would feel as if I just stopped working out for weeks. At some point in time, my body is going to feel the difference and the change because there's something that has been bolstering it, that's helping it, that's increasing it. And now I'm seeing that, you know, that time in nature is the same thing.
An alternate way of describing, of saying there are hospital rooms where people's beds move so that the gardening is more visible. You could also say, can you imagine there are hospital rooms with no view of nature?
Exactly.
Like somehow that became normal. I mean, there might be reasons for it if they want sterility in some cases, but for outpatient stuff, I'd think, how did we get to a place where there was, actually, I found this a fair amount. I'll be in conversations with people sometimes and I ask them, from where you are right now, can you see anything living? And, you know, it's surprising how many times people, they're in a room with, like, maybe if they look out the window, they'll see a tree off in the distance, but like there's nothing living that they can see.
And I believe it. And the same thing has happened in school settings. The same thing happens. And you think of it, people spend the majority of their time at work, but they don't see that. And that's what we're saying. We're realizing that that has become harmful to folks. And it was just an era of architecture that we... Now, if you ask the same thing, like, can you imagine it? And you ask people why we did it. Well, folks say, well, we built spaces to do A, B, C, and D, but it was also at the detriment of people. Now we're kind of going back to some... And we're seeing that particularly in the social services where we're saying, as you're designing these spaces, these are things you have to incorporate because people do better when they have these. And what's your justification for not doing it? Even what you mentioned about sterility, if a place that's doing brain surgery, where I imagine you're going to have it as sterile as possible, is saying that this is absolutely beneficial. You know, I'm not saying set somebody after they got out of surgery right there in the garden and you know, in the pile of dirt. What I'm saying is, but they have access to that space. You're seeing healing gardens in medical facilities, where it was just a garden and we knew it was healing. We're calling it that now, but it's because it always worked. And somewhere along the way, we lost our way and forgot how important it was.
When you're out there and visiting the Anacostia River, pondering, walking, resetting, can you name some of the emotions that you're experiencing there? Actually, in the whole experience, also maybe the planning and the considering going there and then afterward, is there an emotional journey?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing I said is calm. By nature, I would say, I would tell folks that I tend to be even keel. You know, well, actually, no, I am like, I feel everything intensely. And I think I had a mother that realized when I was 2 years old, like, oh, this young boy, we're going to get some of these things under control. And to her credit, that allowed me to have a very disciplined life. But it also, you know, the downside of that, you know, I give it much more upside than downside, but the trade-off is, not the doubt, more so the trade-off is, okay, there's a lot of stuff what I will allow to build up and pile on and just like, I'm good, and keep going. Or, okay, this is how I feel, but let it go. I got stuff to do. The biggest sense I get, there's always a calm. It is a calm. It is a release. I always tell things, the thing I respect about water is as calm as it is, do not ever underestimate the power of that water. That same water that is just drizzling on your toe is the same water that is carrying who knows how many ton ships. It's the same water where it can, you know, just get your hand moist. It's the same water that it will wear down any, you know, major surface over time just by continuous. So I have an appreciation for it. There's a calm. There's a time of reflection. And like I said, it's always, who else was here? What's taking place on this water? It's reflection and calm. And that allows me to recenter. And, you know, being able to recenter is now, it's like, all right, I got this week. What do we have to do? And it's more than, that's more than anything else. And what you talked about before, the whole idea of now we're going back to biophilic design where people are spending less time indoors. And now we're trying to make sure that nature is incorporated into our design. So you're talking about, I try not to allow stress, but, you know, things you can't see, you go to the doctor and they say your cortisol levels are high. And I say, oh, well, snap, I need to take care of that. Well, I'm very confident when I go for my annual physical, my numbers are going to be better than they were before. Because now, like I said, to me, this is no different than someone say, hey, you need to eat better. And you do it and you realize, wow, I feel better. My body is doing better and I'm doing better. So I think the calm that is there, the focus that is there, the creativity that comes now that I can free my mind and kind of think about, you know, innovative possibilities for work I'm doing, that is exciting to me. So all those benefits come from it.
Had you not done it and you didn't know what you were missing and someone asked you, are you calm otherwise? Would you have said yes, even when you weren't as calm as you, like, were you not aware that you were not, that there was calmness to be had?
I would honestly tell people I'm good. And that means whether I'm stressed or not, I'm like, I got it under control. And it's just one of those where if I don't feel stressed, it doesn't matter that every metric in my body is probably saying, look, man, you're tired. You haven't slept. You haven't eaten right. You're getting 10,000 things on your plate. As opposed to you kind of get there, you're like, you feel the difference. You're like, no, that's how I don't know if it's a desire to not admit weakness and feeling stress because I'm supposed to have it, but I definitely can tell that if someone had not pointed it out to me, I probably wouldn't have felt, I just would have been like, I'm good. And I would have thought I was good and just trucked on through, as opposed to realizing, you know what? You may have been okay. You may have been managing, but you weren't thriving. And now having that kind of like the pressure valve release where now it's like, look, you're going to find this time and you're going to be better for it. Where now it could be something to look forward to as opposed to something that I got to do.
It's like if you step in a puddle in the beginning of the day and you're busy so you don't have time to change your socks. And so you've been walking around in wet socks all day. And at the end of the day, you take your shoes and socks off and you're like, oh my God, I forgot that that happened. And it's such a relief.
Exactly. It's like, even if you did forget, it's like, okay, well, I got this soggy sock, but I'll get to it eventually. And I think that's the way I would tend to, is like, I'll get to it eventually. I can hang on until I get there. And that would be the same thing kind of like with water. It's like, I can hang on until I can finally get to a point in time where I can relax and get near some water. That's where it more was. It's like, I can hang on until then, as opposed to, no, you don't hang on to your next meal till you get around to it. It's like, no, you do this and if you do it well, you're going to benefit from it. And I think it's pretty much the same thing.
Let's go back a step to when you were planning to go. You didn't yet know that this was that you were going to get the outcome that you did. Were you apprehensive or anxious about maybe I'm wasting my time? Or I knew this was going to work. Do you remember what it was like before you went when you're planning?
It was more so, all right, let me check this out. I mean, the thing is, I know water is calming. But it was one of those things I put into as a luxury or a treat as opposed to something essential. It was, you know, to me, I got 10 things to do, now I'm making it 11. And that became a matter of what am I giving up to do this? It felt more like this, like, okay, I said I'm going to find the time to do it. But it was more so, all right, add one more thing to the list of things to do. And that shifted where it, as opposed to becoming a task, and I would say once you something becomes lifestyle, then the work is not, at that point in time, it's more maintenance. It doesn't take as much work to do it. And every time you do it, you know that you're going to be better off for it. I'm not going to lie. There are times I'm like, oh, I'm so busy. I don't have time for this. It's like, but you feel better. Go. And, you know, when you go, it's like, yep, this is why I need to be here. It's the same thing if a person said, I don't have time, you know, I'm going to skip this meal. You can, but eventually it's going to catch up to you. And I realized this is one of those, okay, you don't have to do this, but eventually it will catch up to you, at least for me.
Now, I know this is just asking you to speculate, but what percent of the population of, say, the United States or Washington, D.C., do you think is in that state of, you know, if you ask, they'd say, yeah, things are great. But if they took this experience, they would say, oh, my God, I should have done this before.
I think D.C. is a type of town where a lot of things, and definitely depending on the arena you're in, if you're in the policy arena, if you're in government, if you are in the advocacy spaces, everything is always go, 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 go. And it is always fast paced. It is always high pressure. There are tremendous stakes at play. And it's not just your career, but you understand, depending on where you work, you're making decisions that are going to impact hundreds of thousands of lives. And unless you're just callous and uncaring, you're going to feel the responsibility of that as well. I do think when people take the time, well, I put it this way. I do believe people take the time. They just do things probably in unhealthy ways. There's no shortage of happy people trying to get happy at happy hours. And I think people will use some other methods, and this is just me speculating, but I think people use other ways to try to, you know, release some of that stress or pressure. This just became a way that I can do it. I'm doing it in a healthy way. And again, as I adopt these other measures that kind of help sustain it, I know I'm doing my part in keeping it. So, yeah, I think if people try it, I think if people do it, then I think they'll see this, you know, similar benefits as well.
And did you spend any money on this, or did you take significant time from anything else? I mean, it sounds like you may have taken some time, but ultimately you got back more time than you put in.
I mean, the only money I spent is the gas or the metro fare to get to the actual places. You know, and like I said, if I really just want to walk to the Anacostia River to Anacostia Park, I can. It's, you know, it'd be like, you know, 25, 30 minute walk, because there's still a little bit of a distance, but I can drive there in literally 10 minutes probably, and can walk there if I want to. So the only cost was my time. Now, I'm a consultant as well as an instructor. So literally, my time is my money. But it's like anything else. What you invest in is what you kind of reap your reward or your benefit from. And for me, understanding that I don't have to be there for half a day, I can spend 30 minutes to an hour. And here's the thing. I would spend that 30 minutes, hour doing something else, whether it was reading emails. If I really want to, I can look at the email while I'm there. I would have spent that time, you know, listening to a podcast, whatever it may be. It was the same this kind of decision that I initially to get me there. It was the same thing I said about exercise. You're going to tell me in 24 hours in a day, 7 days a week, you can't find 1 hour somewhere to do this. And then once you do, you're like, oh, okay, then it's good. You're like, oh, I can find time. I mean, just like I'll listen to a podcast, just like I'll watch a favorite TV show, just like I'll do whatever, it just becomes a part of my life. And then it's not one of those things that's a chore or a task on the list. It's one of the things I do to take care of me, which allows me to take care of others.
A lot of people say to me when I talk about doing things like this, and I say, you know, it gives me time, it doesn't cost any money, or even gives me back money because I'm not spending it on something else. A lot of times people say, well, you know, Josh, not everyone is so privileged to have the time and money and resources that you do. And now, of course, I know that I have a lot more access to a lot of things that other people don't. But I'm almost unable to get across to them that many of these things take no time and take no money and give back time and give back money. But if people haven't done it, I think they're stuck in the view that if I understand you right, you started with. Of, well, it's one or the other. And if I've got to work three jobs, how can I take time for this other stuff? But I think if people experienced it, I think they're saying that out of not knowing, not experiencing that while some things may be impossible, it's not across the board. And that the more that people experience this, the more that they'll be able to change systems to increase accessibility. I don't want to get too far ahead of that, but I think that people are missing what you're talking about.
The one thing that I've learned in 51 going off 52 years is this. Time is going to pass whether you do something or not, and it's either going to be to your benefit or to your detriment. Like I said, literally, if it only takes me 30 minutes to an hour, even if I only did it one day, and let's say only one day a week, a year is going to pass whether I use that time or not. A year is going to pass whether I read a book or not. A year is going to pass whether I move around or not. And at the end of the year, am I going to be better off or worse off? So anytime someone tells me you don't have time, I said, no, you made a decision on where you want to spend your time. And I'll respect that. But if you haven't attempted or tried it, then you don't know. And I'm willing to do one of the things I tell everybody out there, and even my students will attest to this because I just told a bunch of them last night. It is, I test every assumption and I verify all evidence. So if I truly believe this is the case, test that assumption. If I'm right, it's going to hold. And I'll be like, yep, just like I told you. If I'm wrong, then what have I done? Oh, I've made my life better. That seems like a good trade-off. Same thing. I'm going to verify the evidence. I'm telling myself, I don't have the time or the resources. Well, for what? Like you said, what does it cost me to go down there to one of the rivers or to the harbor? Just time, gas, or metro fare. That's it. Now, how much is that? Okay. Am I better off if I am more efficient because now I am centered and now I'm more effective with my day? And chances are, if I'm building that time in, there is a certain day that now is sacred to me that I'm very effective with it. I've carved that day out for myself to do that and other administrative things. But now it means I'm better for the other 4 days of the week. Why wouldn't I want that? And that's something I would assume may not be the case until I actually do it. So again, the worst case I found out is that, oh, wow, I'm actually better off. And it may be something that instinctively I tell myself that, ah, but the other part too is that, like I said, most choices are not as binary either or as we think they are. It's not, well, I can take care of my health or I can take care of my family, or, oh, I can, take this 30 minutes here, or I can. Most don't boil down to that. I'm not asking people to make, and you didn't ask me to make a major life overhaul. You didn't tell me, go join, the forestry department and, work there, 20 hours a week. Find something you like that connect, and I did. And like I said again, now the other days of the week, I am more efficient with, I am better with, I'm more focused with, because I know every week there's going to be a point in time where it's kind of like, all right, exhale. Cool. We're here. Let's think. Let's plan. Let's, do these other things. Let's just relax for a minute. 30 minutes, maybe up to an hour. Then after that, okay, back to our regularly scheduled program, but I'm in a better place.
Cool. So now when people say that to me, I'm going to say, listen to this episode with Stephen Broyles on my podcast. He answers this for you.
Wow.
So you talked about your student. Oh, sorry.
I'm glad I could do my part there.
You talked about your students. I'm going to use that as a segue to transfer to, we talked a lot about what felt to me was like in the first conversation, the overlap between what I call teaching leadership and you teaching social work and practicing social work. Did the Spodek method technique overlap or inform or the other way? Did the social work inform the Spodek method? Was there something new there, something valuable?
It's an alignment. I mean, I tell folks, social work and particularly macro social work is leadership. There's no way around it. I mean, and it is relationship. A lot of times when people think of social workers, they only think of folks doing case management or clinical therapy. That's only a portion of the field. The other part are those of us that do policy and administration and running nonprofits and developing programs and raising money and, doing advocacy and doing research and teaching in academic institutions. That's the other part of social work that people forget about. And that is all about leadership. But more importantly, it's about relationship, because you can't do any of those things well without relationship. So the things that kind of go in the Spodek method as well, as you look at all of this, we are in alignment in terms of, and I think that's when you were talking about that Evelyn was saying, like, hey, this is what we do, because it is. All these things we talked about in terms of the decisions we make and the impact that it has, we talked about unintended and unintended consequences when you carry out any act. And we try to be as predictive as possible, but it goes back to that whole test your assumptions, because, your opinion and $1.50 will give you a bag of chips and that's it. If you can't the one thing I would say about macro work, clinical is very much more, I feel, I believe, I think, and they'll use those statements. And macro social work is more so, what you can prove, what you can state, what you can evidence, what you have the facts for, and then how can you have a context to, you know, to make the case for your facts and whether they're causative or correlation. That's the kind of world we deal in. So when you're looking at these items you're talking about in sustainability, you know, the one of the first questions in what we do is, okay, we're going to do this change, but how do you sustain it over time? It does you no good to build it if it's going to be torn down a week from now or fall apart. How do we get long-term sustainability, and what are the decisions that get us there, both collectively and individually? So I say a lot of what we're doing is complementary. It's they are in alignment.
Now, I'm glad to hear that because it feels like that way to me. Although when you're saying sustainability, I clarify that I work on sustainability leadership. And the distinction here is I think most places working on, I can talk about NYU, most of what they do on sustainability is learning facts and numbers and spreading facts and numbers, and not, it's working with extrinsic motivation, not intrinsic. And it's probably there more than I'm saying, but I don't see a whole lot of leadership there. And I'm curious if, I don't know what Howard does, for example, on sustainability, but could it use what you do if they're just doing facts and numbers and here's the science, and but not actually digging into the intrinsic motivation to find out what impassions people and to do this experiential stuff? Could they benefit from what you're doing?
I would say they benefit, and that is kind of intrinsic to what we do at Howard University. I mean, one of the things you're also going to hear is our social work, we do things from the Black perspective. And the Black perspective has the different principles that guide the work that we do. But one of the things we definitely realize about anyone that's coming to this field, there is a reason why they are here. And it may have been something they've experienced. It may have been something they've seen. It may be a desire to bring about change. And really the whole idea is how can we equip these individuals, these marvelous, spectacular, intelligent folks that are going to be our colleagues. And that's really where the motivation comes from as well. And if you're talking about sustainability, there is nothing more exciting than to know I'm participating in the training of my colleagues and the people that are going to take up the mantle when I'm no longer willing or able to do this, when I'm no longer able to do this work. And I know they're doing it because it matters to them. I always say we are in a profession where we can both do good and do well. And that's, again, another binary decision. I say this does not have to exist. I'm not asking a student to take a vow of poverty. You know, if you're going to take on the work of doing a graduate loan and everything that goes along with it and do a master's level work, I don't expect you to make $1.25 a year. But I do tell them they all are in this profession because there's some meaningful change to them that they want to do. They've looked at their communities and said something does not seem right, something does not seem just, something does not seem fair, and there's something I can do about this, and I'm going to get equipped to be able to do something. They come in here motivated in terms of what they want to do. Now, what we do is like, how can we put some more logs on that fire and then teach them how to use it? And it's what you're talking about, those intrinsic things, that becomes a part of how we have to teach, because if we're talking about systemic things, we're talking about long-term things that you're not going to necessarily knock out in 6 months or a year. We're preparing you for a career of doing this work where you will see some meaningful change by the time you get done and have the motivation, you know, that will sustain you through this work. So that's why I say I really feel like it's aligned, because in the work we do, we can't separate one or the other, because I mean, this is definitely one of the cases where for many of the students, and I'll just speak for myself, and I won't even put this on my students. For me, I can't really separate myself from that work because I'm a part of that community that's being impacted. So all these issues we're addressing, it's not that I'm external to them. It's that some of these were things I grew up with, some things that I saw. So I definitely want better. It's not let me help them poor people over. No, it is. These are things that are impacting communities, and we see how people are strong and people are resilient and they are surviving. I want to get past surviving to thriving and see all people do well. And this is a vehicle to be able to do so. And that's what draws people to this field. And that's why I say in terms of looking at intrinsic motivations, that really, to have a career and a career where you do this at a high level, then I see exactly what you're talking about and how that intrinsic motivation will keep a person going, because I don't care how good you are, there's always opposition. There's always rough days. What's going to allow you to pick yourself, dust yourself off the next day and get back at it, because you're saying, this is just a part of who I am and I love this and I'm ready every day to get up to do this again. That's the kind of folks we get, which means that's the way we have to teach.
Well, I'm really interested to hear. I mean, you and I are going to be in touch for all the courses and things that we're talking about. I hope that, so you're going to, in the future, do the wooded stuff as opposed to the, or on top of the water stuff.
Yep.
And I think that some of this is, it sounds like this is going to influence how you teach and maybe consult. No obligation, but will you come back after you've done those things and share if things have changed there or what's happened and things like that?
Absolutely. Especially with the weather breaking, it's going to be much more comfortable out in the wooded area. So I'm looking forward to it.
And is there anything I didn't think to ask this time that you want to get across or say to the listeners?
I think you got it. But the biggest thing that I really want to underscore again is that it is not the binary choice that people think it is. It's not an either or. It is not one at the expense of the other. It is, you can have both, and they build, one is the foundation for the other, and they build upon each other and just make it all better. So I think if anything else, kind of like that's the lesson I got from it. So that's just something I would underscore, but I think you did a phenomenal job.
That is both the wonderful message that I don't say enough, and now I want to point people to this episode. And while you were saying it, I was making notes for, you know, I put little notes when I post the audio, and as I was underlining, build on each other, you said underscore, and I was like, that's amazing. He said what I was doing. A little silly thing. Well, Stephen, I look forward to being in touch, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me, and I appreciate you for sending me on this journey.
How many people are bringing a message of joy from what everyone calls saving the environment, but I call the future? Step by step, this podcast is creating a culture of joy, community, and connection around sharing and acting on our environmental values. Again, there's no profit in buying and wasting less, but we'll all love our lives and relationships more when we do. I can use your support. Please donate at joshuaspodek.com/donate. Again, that's joshuaspodek.com/donate.